Throughout the year, we're all very busy with our careers, with our businesses, and although everyone tries their best to go to have a daf yomi, to have a chavrusa, to have a shir, from the outside, we can be forgiven for thinking that the Chayei Shah and his business seems to be the ikkar and the primary focus of his life. But then, when it comes to a legal holiday, when we have off, and suddenly everyone runs to the Beis Medrash, to Chaparayim, he has a few extra moments, he takes that time and uses it to learn, to come to a shir. It's a beautiful Kiddush Hashem, and it really demonstrates and that throughout that all of our actions throughout the year are all to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. During the year, when we have our businesses, we do it in one way. When we have a little extra time, we do it in another way. And in many ways, this is ties in to the topic, to this morning's topic. We're going to be discussing Bezdin and dealing with Dinei Torah. Conflict is inevitable. If you're alive, you're dealing with people. Yet people have different agendas, different needs, different expectations, and people get into disagreements. Now, if you can work it out, be mafasher, be mavater, wonderful. Certainly, that's the optimal way of dealing with the dispute. But very often, people simply can't. The stakes are too high. There's too much. There's too emotionally involved, and they're at an impasse. When there is an impasse, the issue has to be resolved somehow. In the olden days, we had a duel at high noon, but today, I think we have a more dangerous sport. It's called litigation. It's certainly more expensive than a duel. But that's not the way a Torah Yid resolves their disputes. The same way when we want to know what we can eat, same way when we have a question about what to do on Shabbos, we search out the Dvar Hashem. That is certainly equally true to when we have a Chosh Mishpadish. When we have a dispute with a business partner, really, it's like, maybe the question in front of us may be about dollars and cents, but essentially it's a question of Leisigzol, a question of Mazik, it's a question of Isser Vehetzer. And you're not going to get the Dvar Hashem from a civil judge. For that, we have to go to a Bez and we have to go to a Din Torah. And we're going to talk a bit about the process, what a bezin is, and what it isn't. And the Gemara tells us that other nikar v'kisvei v'kasvei v'koisvei. If you want to know a person's real character, you can look at how he acts when he's intoxicated, how he acts when he gets angry, and v'kisvei, how he acts when there's money on the line. Now, I very often say that in bezin we have a double whammy. We get to see people dealing with kisvei. And with Kasa. They're dealing with the money and they're worked up, they're angry about it. And sometimes it brings out the worst in people. Some people don't do well with conflict. But it doesn't have to be that way. When you have a dispute between two parties, although everyone feels they're right, essentially it's a halacha question. And the same way when you're going to ask the question about a chicken or about anything else, it's a halacha question. You present the shaila, and either it'll be asr or be mutzer. The same thing in the Dinei Mamonos. It boils down to a halacha question at the end of the day. Present the shaila and get it stocked in. There's no reason for it to be such a confrontational setup. Now, to talk about an actual bezdin, there are many misconceptions about what a bezdin does, and about the process. And one of the many reasons for this misperceptions is you think about it, Bezdin do not do much of marketing. They don't advertise, they don't do infomercials, and they're really, their reputation is really spread by word of mouth. Now, I don't know how many people here are in retail or have websites, but if you're going to start an enterprise, and you're guaranteed from day one that at least 50% of your customers are going to be not just unsatisfied, they're going to be fuming about your service. How long do you think that enterprise will last? Now, in a Din Torah, simply by definition, 50% of the people that come in will lose the case. Which means, in best case scenario, half the people who walk through the doors walk away with a very negative impression. The Dayanim clearly were incompetent because they ruled against me. The 50% is the best case scenario. More often than not, even the winner, in a case where there's a pshara, and we'll discuss what a pshara is and isn't in a few moments, but even the winner walks away, I didn't win enough. And therefore, it's the press that Batei Din and Dinei Torah get, because it's only coming from litigants, and many litigants at the end of the day are not happy because they've lost. So many things that are spread are not necessarily accurate. There certainly are problems within the Beis Din system, but it's important to, I think, have an understanding about how a Beis Din operates, what they could do, and how to avoid some of the more difficult situations. So let's begin with the basics. The pasuk tells us, "Shaytim v'shaytim titiyim l'chol b'chol sh'arecha." There's a mitzvah asei d'oraisa to have a Beis Din in every city, chol sh'arecha, kol ir v'ir v'chol plach v'plach. Every city, every region needs their own Beis Din. Now the need for a Beis Din is pretty obvious. People argue, people fight. If you go back and look, even in the Midbar. Now, if you think about it, Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, when they left Mitzrayim, how much business did they do? They were in the desert. There was no one around them. There was no import, export. They wanted to do business with people around them. And everyone there, there were no restaurants. They had the mun fell every day. Their clothing seemed to have just been, didn't get worn out. So you think they were sitting in Kael, there wasn't much going on. And yet, even the Dordeya needed Dayanim. Parshas Yisro describes in Sari Alokim, Sari Neiris, you needed at the end, Sari Asaris, every 10 people needed a Dayan. That's a lot of litigation. And the reality is, we all know, people tend to have strong opinions. And again, you need a way to resolve disputes. And therefore, there's a fee of the rights to have a Beis Din in every city and every region. Now, the Gemara makes a distinction between in Eretz Yisrael, you need in every city and every region. In Chutz La'aretz, their requirement is not quite as high. You need a whole plach to plach in every region. You don't need in every single city. So if you have multiple cities in the same area, it's enough to set up one Beis Din. You don't need a separate Beis Din for each and every village, each and every city. Now this mitzvah is not brought down in Shulchan Aruch. It's not brought down. And the reason for that is, although there's an obligation to have a Beis Din, what does a Beis Din mean? Who's qualified to sit on a Beis Din? So the halacha is you need smicha. You need people that have smicha. And without smicha, midoraisa, midoraisa, you cannot have a Beis Din. Now what's the problem? There are many people around that have smicha. The problem is that what we call smicha today is not what real smicha is with halacha. True smicha has to be ish miti ish from Moshe Rabbeinu. There has to be an unbroken chain from Rebbe to Talmud handed down from one generation to the next. And if the chain is broken, then Klal Yisrael no longer has smicha. Already in the times of the Gemara, the chain was fraying. The Goyim made numerous takanos outlawing smicha. And therefore, there were very few people. Eretz Yisrael existed somewhat, but shortly afterwards, it ended. And therefore, today we do not have smuchin. Midoraisa, we do not have the right to set up a Beis Din. And therefore, this mitzvah of shoytim v'shoytim titiyam l'cha, the mitzvah to have a Beis Din is a mitzvah that cannot be mekuyim today, midoraisa mikra hadin, because we do not have people that meet the criteria to have a Beis Din midoraisa. Now, afal pikein, Chazal saw when this was happening, they saw there was going to be an issue. There's a concept of shlichusayo kavina, which means that the chachamim in Eretz Yisrael authorized people in Chutz La'aretz to do their shlichus, to be a shliach, to be an agent of the gdolim that had smicha. And therefore, you can have people who are not smuchin, they don't have a real smicha, but they're acting as the shlichus, they're acting on behalf of the smuchim in Eretz Yisrael of the previous generations. And therefore, they could set up a Beis Din. However, because you're dealing with the setup, which might be Darabon, might be Daraisa, and it's very limited, there are only certain types of issues that we can deal with because of the Shlichus. There has to be a Chesaron Kiss, there has to be something which is Shchiach. But because of these limitations, the Fee of Midoraisa does not apply. While there's no Fee of Daraisa, nevertheless, the Achronim say it certainly is a good idea, it's appropriate, because at the end of the day, there are going to be disputes. We need a way to resolve them, l'halacha. There is an isser arkayis. Going to civil court is usually not an option. Hopefully we'll discuss that a bit later. And therefore, it's appropriate to have a beis din, but it doesn't rise to the level of a straightforward mitzvah d'oraisa to set one up. Now this raises the question of, okay, there's no chiyuv to have a beis din mid'oraisa because we do not have smuchim. Why can't I just ask my rav? Why do I need a beis din? Why do we need another? Baruch Hashem, Chai Yisrael has so many moises that we have to support. Why do we need a beis din? Everyone has their own rav. A shayla will come up. They'll ask a rav. They'll get a psak. They'll move on. And there are two basic reasons why this does not work. The first is that when you have a question on your chicken, that's a personal shayla. So you have a rav, you have a moir harav, you have a rebbe, you have a rebbe, whoever it is who's your poysik, who you turn to for guidance, it's your personal question. You'll ask the shayla, you'll get a psak din, and whether it's asur, whether it's mutter, you'll follow that, and that's the way a harav works. You have a rebbe, you have a ma'ayyadi, you have a mehagin, you have a mesayra, and that's what gets followed. The problem is, when you're dealing with klesh mishpat, you're dealing with financial dispute. By definition, it's not just your shayla. There's someone else, there's a counterpart. There's someone else who's going to be impacted by that psak. So while you might, throughout, your hanhaga might be, whenever you have a question, you go to your particular rav, your business partner, your client, your employee, can't be forced to go to your rav. He has his own rav. He has, perhaps, his own mesayer. He has his own mahalachachai. And because it involves two people, neither party has the right to say, my rav is the one that's right, he's the one who I follow, go to him. Parties have to agree, they have to come to some sort of haskama, who they're going to submit to, who they're going to present the shayla to. But you can't unilaterally decide, this is the person whose psak I'm going to follow. If you do want to do that, if you have a relationship with a rav or a beis din that you have confidence in, so put it in the agreement. It's a wise idea every time you have to sign a contract, for there to be a dispute resolution clause. What happens if there's an issue? And at that point, you can negotiate. You can say, I want it to go to this rav or this beis din. And if he signs the contract, there's an agreement. But in the absence of an agreement, neither party can say, I have my rav who I want to go to. It's something that involves two parties. The second point is that even if the two of you share the same rav, if you call your rav and ask him a shayla, you present the case to him, your rav will probably agree with you that you're right. And there's a very simple reason for it. He's only hearing part of the story. He's only hearing your side of the story. And when you hear one side of the story, you never, ever get the full picture. We sit in the bedroom all the time. A person will come in, and the tevei, the plaintiff, speaks first. And he presents his case, and generally, if he came to bed and he feels he's right, he generally has a reasonably good argument. And we stop the entire right then and there and told the defendant, no, you don't have a chance to speak, we're passing on the spot, the plaintiff would probably win in virtually all the cases. But we don't stop them. We let the defendant talk. And when he talks, he presents, very often he's not accusing the plaintiff of lying, but he presents additional facts. He presents other documentation. He gives his perspective of what happened. And the outcome of his entire is probably about 50-50. Sometimes the Tevea wins, sometimes the Nisba wins. Because you have to have the full story before you give a psak. So if you're calling the rav, no matter how honest or fair you're trying to be, you're never going to be able to understand the other party's side or arguments perfectly. And therefore, a rav that's hearing one side of the story can never give a psak then, because he simply doesn't know the case. He's passing on a chicken that he's never seen. And therefore, it's critical that both parties together speak to the rav, everyone will have the opportunity to present their story, and then the rav can paskin after hearing the entire case. Now, on top of that, besides the fact that a rav has no jurisdiction, can't impose his opinion on the other side, there's another halacha of Shemayah ben Achaiha. When you go to a bezer where you have a dispute, al-pi halacha, both parties have to be present when you're presenting your claim. If one party on his own comes to Bez and says, listen, I don't want to talk in front of the other person, let me tell you what happened, and presents his claim. And then the Bezin calls in the other party, Dalafia, they can't do it. You have to hear the Tainus, the Fnei Baldin. Both parties have to be there. And the reason for that, as Rashi explains, is that if one party gets to talk without the other's presence, he'll be a lot looser. He knows there's no one there to contradict him. He doesn't have to look the other party in the eye. And the Dayanim weren't there, they don't know the story. It's much easier for a person, if not to outright lie, but to exaggerate and to present things in a certain way, which if he was facing the other party and sitting across the table, looking him in the eye, he probably wouldn't have the chutzpah to say it quite the way he does. So it's al-pidin, a bezin is not allowed to hear from one party in the absence of the other. Now very often we'll deal with partners will come in, neighbors, friends, and they're coming to Bezin because they have a disagreement. But one of the parties still wants to maintain the relationship. He doesn't want to go ahead and let loose and tell this other person to his face what he thinks of him and what kind of terrible things he did. So very often he'll ask the Bezin, I still need to add, I don't want to say it in front of him, can I speak to the Bezin privately? The Bezin cannot agree to do that. Because if you think of that, it's very unfair. The other person has no idea what's being said, can't defend themselves, and when they get upstocked in, they don't know what it was based on. And therefore, a Bezin is not allowed to allow one party to speak if the other party is not present. Now, sometimes, if they have a good enough relationship, the parties will agree. We've had cases where a person made that request, I have something to say, but it's going to hurt him, I don't want to say it in front of him, and the person said, okay, I'll walk out. And if a party is willing to do it, he's willing to accept it, he's makabel, then the Bezin can go with it. But to impose that, to force that a Bezin cannot do, because Shemoy Ben Atechem, everyone has the right to be there when there are arguments being made, when there's testimony, or whenever anything is being presented to the Bezin. Now when a Rav gets a question, it's actually interesting, if you look at much of what we know about Kodesh Mishpat, we have Shulchan Aruch, but we have a tremendous amount of tshuvas. The Sha'aros of tshuvas written by Rishonim, by Achronim, and there's a huge amount of tshuvas written about Kodesh Mishpat. Now if you think about it, what does it mean to have a tshuva about Kodesh Mishpat? It means this: someone had a question, sent it to the Rajba, the Ramah, the Bach, whoever it may be, and got a response. Wait a second. How can you do that? The Ramah, whoever it is getting a letter from one party. Are you allowed to respond to a question that one person gets, or a shayla one party is presented, without the other party having the opportunity to weigh in and say what they think really happened? So here we find some interesting discussion. Some shuvas were actually written with questions, were not written by the Baal Yed Din. The questions were posed by a Bez Din. You had a little village, the local rav in the village, he was confident enough to answer your basic Buster B'chol of Shailas, or maybe the basic question of Mishpat. But when there was a fight, there was this dispute that was too difficult for him, he would hear the parties out, he'd write down the question, and then he would send it to a Gadol Hadar, or someone who, this is the question that came from the Bez Din, what's the P'sak Din? So many Jews that we have are actually that. They're not responding to a Baal Din, they're responding to a Bez Din that needed guidance that wasn't able to pass them on their own. On the other hand, if a Baal Din comes and asks a Shaila, so here the halacha is that a Rav should not be answering. Even though it doesn't have the tukif of a P'sak Din, the other party is not obligated to listen. Nevertheless, simply answering that the way you're describing the story, this is what the halacha would be, is something which the halacha should not be done. And there are two reasons that are brought down. One is, if you tell the fellow that he's wrong, if you tell the fellow that he goes to bed and he's going to lose, what's going to happen the next day when he gets to Hazmona? He's not going to show up. We're afraid the person, when he knows the outcome is going to be against him, will do whatever he can to avoid going to his interior. And therefore, it's better not to answer. Let him go to bed. And then the Bezin will decide whether he'll win, he'll lose. When he goes in, he'll think he has a chance. But to warn him before you're going to lose could lead to problems. The second, and perhaps more fundamental issue, is that if a person presents his case, and you hear the case, you tell him, you know what, based on your story, you're going to lose. And you explain it to him, because the way you're describing it, there's no kinyan, there's no contract, and you explain to him why it is that he stands to lose. Human nature is, when they end up in bed in a week or two later, they're going to suddenly remember, you know what, maybe we did sign up, you know, it wasn't quite the way I remember it, we really made an agreement like this, we made a kinyan like that. And the story, again, even if we're not dealing with someone who is outright going to lie, but suddenly the story shifts somewhat. And therefore, by warning someone in advance, you're going to lose, this is the halacha, and this is why, you're creating a tremendous incentive for that person to present his case a bit differently. And therefore, if you're asked the question, even if the person said, it's not a psak, I know, it's not binding, I'm going to go to a din torah, but sitting down and discussing with him is something which the place can bring down is awesome. Now, nevertheless, many shuvas, it was done in many cases. And the article also says, if you're asking, if the Rav knows the person asking the question and has confidence it will not be abused, very often answering the question is a big chesed. Because if it's the kind of person, if he knows he's wrong, will just say, okay, if I'm wrong, I'll cut a check. Then telling the person that he's wrong is saving everyone a lot of agnus nefesh, a lot of time and expense, and therefore it can be done. On the other hand, if you don't know the person, or if his integrity is somewhat suspect, then answering him is not appropriate, and the Rav should just say, I'm only hearing part of the story, and just not give any clear answer. Now, I tell you from experience, very old people will call, and even when you feel it's appropriate and you answer them, you give them an answer and give all the disclaimers, it's not a psak din, and the other person you go to with the entire because I'm not his Rav, and I'm only hearing part of the story. Even after all that, every once in a while you give out such an opinion, and 10 minutes later you get a phone call from the other side, is it true? I just heard you passing that I owe the fellow $3 million. And you know, you're put in a difficult position where you say, no, it's not true. I told him that's my opinion, but I've only heard part of the story, and you should go to a dentist, you should go to a bed, and it will hear everyone and issue an impartial psak. So while it's tempting to take a shortcut, speak to your Rav, it's something which generally is not helpful, and adrabba. When Rabbanim answer and give piskei din, it very often cause problems, because now the party is now convinced he's right. If he goes to Bezdin and loses, he's very upset. Either at the Bezdin, or at the Rav. Because what happened? The Rav told me I'm right. Now what happened? What really happened? The Rav told me you were right based on the information that he was given. But now that Bezdin heard both sides of the story, the halacha is different. Actually, once had a case where parties came to the Bezdin and presented their case, and we passed them in one way. The person that lost was very upset. And he said he spoke to a very chashuv guy who said he was right. So, alright, you know, what can we do? Well, this is our opinion. This is, you know, Dayan only heard one part of the story. But B'Taych HaDvarim, it came out that this exceptionally chashuv Dayan that he was referring to was myself. Now, calling chashuv is probably Shaykh HaDvarim. That, if we have time, we'll get to. But the answer is, and the truth is, afterwards, I remembered that I hadn't spoken to the person directly, I had spoken to someone else, who I didn't put two and two together. There was a similar case had been presented, but some critical facts weren't told. And therefore, the halakha sounded like one way. And I told the person it's not a psak, and it's just based on it. But to this person, he was upset, you know, on both ends. You had the answer, the psak din, how come they were not consistent? Now, al pi din, had I known that I had already discussed the case, I would have refused. Now, al pi, that's actually, maybe I'll go through that now. Besides for the fact that a rav shouldn't be answering, if a rav discusses a case and gives an opinion, he can no longer sit on the bezdin. Because once he gave a psak, that's it. Now, it's true he might be a very fair and open-minded person. And he might be the kind of person, when he hears now new information, he'll change his mind. But there's a certain amount, there are really two issues. First of all, there's Shemaya ben Achecha. Because he heard the story, Zeshloi b'Kneizeh, with ex parte communication, he very often has a natural tendency, you have a certain bias, you believe the story you heard first,
And therefore, even though now it's being said over again in front of everyone, but what you heard that first time, it has, leaves an impression, and it's hard to overcome that. So once you've heard the story, then you should not be sitting on the bed. And even worse, if you've already offered an opinion, it's embarrassing to have to backtrack. And you can darsh it from today to tomorrow, I changed my mind because of new information, and I didn't know this, and I didn't know that. But it's certainly smoother and easier to keep your opinion the same. And therefore, once a Rav has offered an opinion, or a psak, then he's not allowed to sit on a vest that deals with the matter afterwards. Now this can raise serious problems in a Bezdin, but they din are all underfunded. That is one thing that every Bezdin on the planet has in common. And one of the ways that a Bezdin can save a few dollars is if you do not have a sacred dayan, if you do not have a secretary who is dealing with the paperwork, dealing with the office, one of the dayanim does it, and that's, he gets paid to do that. And the problem is that if there's no sacred dayan, then any time you call, you have an issue. When you call the Bezdin, you have to describe what happened. You don't go through the details. You say, he borrowed this, my partner's a ganav, he borrowed X amount of dollars, he never paid that, paid me back. Now, if you're talking to a secretary or a sacred dayan, that can listen, can talk to you as much as he wants. He's not going to be a dayan on the case. But if one of the dayanim is the one that's manning the phones, and you're speaking to them to set it up, then by definition, whoever calls the Bezdin has an opportunity to present some details about the case. So this is a problem. Now, in halacha, it is not ipsil, because when you call the Bezdin, since the Bezdin does not know whether the other party is going to agree to come, they're hearing the story not as a Bezdin. It's not being discussed as a psak. It's just a describing a case, how you'd like to start the process. So if you hear it before you know that you're going to deal with it as a dayan, it's not a psul maker hadin. However, again, it's something which can lead to, you know, bad feelings, or it can get sticky. And therefore, it's certainly a tremendous advantage if Bezdin is able to have a sacred dayan, but certainly it's a tremendous advantage because this leads dayanim are insulated. When they walk into the room, they know nothing about the case. If there was a lot of back and forth until the parties came, you sent hasmanos and siros and fighting that with Bezdin, the dayanim know nothing. They come in, blank slate, they hear the case, pass it on the merits. If it's possible, that's certainly a tremendous advantage. Again, not every Bezdin has that luxury, and therefore sometimes they're forced to compromise, and the dayanim will be the staff of the dayanim. Now, there's a Rashdam, that actually, going back to the question of can I just go to my Rav when I have a...
Shouldn't that be also the question? If one person comes to the Bezdin, I want to take the Bezdin, I have the case, and I want to take this, bring this thing to the Bezdin. So suddenly, you yourself just said that, they're underfunded, but suddenly you see, oh, a case is coming in, we're going to be charging something. So... Isn't it an obvious right away? The person that's calling, he's your customer.
Well, not really. Because although he made the first move, as we will discuss how to choose a Bezdin. Or what happens when there's a disagreement where to go. At the end of the day, in most areas, you can never force a party to come to a specific Bezdin if he doesn't want to. So it's true he's the one that called, but the other party can, when you send a hazmana, invite them to Bezdin, have every right to say, you know what, I have a dispute, we have to resolve it, we have to go to Bezdin, but not yours. So if they do agree, then both of them are voluntarily coming, you don't have one over the other. The Igros Moshe actually does say, in the case of a boyerus, where someone says, I want this dayan specifically on the case, where the dayan gets paid, so Moshe says, that's shleichai dvarim. But that's a significant shaykh advarim, and that can cause problems because he's being singled out. I want him. He does use your svara and pat halacha lemaisa. But in a typical case, simply the fact that you send a hazmana doesn't mean they'll come. We'll get to, as we'll discuss soon, very often you send a hazmana from beds and you don't want to go to. And we'll see why in a few moments, but that's why hazmana itself is not itself.
That does not necessarily mean so. Secretary
gets sent,
Dr. Dining, they have to issue
the Hasmana
of the Seru?
Well, the Seru, they certainly do. The Hasmana is sent on behalf of the Bezdin. The Bezdin, the Dayanim do not know the details of the Hasmana. If there's a Seru, they have to be issued, that's a different story. But once there's a Seru, the person who receives the Tzeirut virtually never will come and submit to the Beis Din for that Tzeirut. They'll go, even when they come around, they're ready to come to Beis Din, they'll go somewhere else because they'll feel, and you know, with some level of justification, if the Beis Din put me in Cheirim, they probably don't like me very much. Now, the halacha, that's not an argument, because while if you know the party and you have sinner, you have, he's an enemy, you're possible to be on the case. On the other hand, if he's a Russia, and because he's a Russia, you have certain, you know, certain impression of him, that's not a psul. Because if he's a Russia, every Beis Din will know that he's a Russia. So sinner is a psul. If it's a personal matter, if it's simply the question of that fact that he did an aveira, it's not a psul. But in practice, he'll go somewhere else and the Beis Din will let him. In other words, Rashi speaks out that because of potential issues of, or an appearance of negius, he says that a rav should never pass him for anyone in his kila. Al pidini is allowed to, just simply because the fellow comes to his shul and davens there is not grounds to disqualify him. But he says it's not a good idea. Whoever loses, if the other person, if your congregant wins, the other person will walk away with this feeling, you know what, maybe had to make him happy. And therefore, he says you should not take it. Take a case involving a member, or even if both of them are members, that's also a problem. Now, why? If they're both members, what's the negius? They're both members, and assuming they both pay the same, you know, same membership dues. So why is there a problem? They'll both be equal. So here, the unfortunate speak out that when you have a button, it's the same way you can't be on his entire for a friend of yours. If they're both your friend, it's a problem. Same problem. Because let's say you have a diamond. Now he is this Ganev is a Ganev and a Tzadik. He's a Ganev that he takes bribery. The Tzadik, he insists that both parties bribe him equally. Now he says there's no bias. They're each paying the same amount. So obviously this is not going to work. Personally, with an issue of Shaykhah, you don't really need a Svara. But even when there is a bias that doesn't rise to the level of Shaykhah, when you're biased against both, there are two problems. First of all, your bias might not be the same. And second of all, when you want to make both people happy, you know what you're going to do? You're going to make a charter. You're going to cut a deal. You don't want to issue a ruling that's completely against either of them. So the very fact, even though you have your relationship is both of them is equal, if there is some level of negius, you're going to be possible. We don't say they counteract each other. We say it's a problem because you won't want to rule one way or another. Now, I'm from Lakewood. There's a community, and the deal community is about 20 minutes away from Lakewood. It's a Sephardi community. They do not have a Beis Din. And their setup there is actually very smart. The Rabbanim there, whenever there's a dispute, they say, listen, we can't pass them, we don't have a Beis Din. They force the issue to a Lakewood Beis Din. And whenever the Lakewood Beis Din passes, the Rabbanim back it up 100%. But this way, if the congregants came to them and they passed them, then every time there was an issue, they're definitely losing one member. Question is maybe two, but one they're definitely losing. On the other hand, if when an issue comes up, they say, listen, you have to go to Beis Din, go to Lakewood, deal with it there. Then, they both go, one party wins, one party loses, the Rav says, listen, I don't understand what the psak was, I don't know the story, but you went to Beis Din, you heard it, you gotta listen. And this way, the Rav is not the one that passed them against him, the Rav is not, quote unquote, the bad guy, and it's something that works out, works well for everyone involved. So now that we've established you can't just go to your Rav, you can't just ask a Shiloh unilaterally. The question is, do I need a Beis Din of Gimel? Do I really need to go to a formal Beis Din and have three Dayanim? Or can the two of us decide, let's go to one Dayan, we'll sit down in his study, we'll accept him as the Dayan, we'll present the case, it'll be quicker, it'll be cheaper, it doesn't have to be as formal. Can you do that? Now, Al Pi Din, as long as it's Tiblu Alayu, as long as the parties accept, you can accept a Dayan Yachid. And if the parties agree that Makabel Kenyan, you have every right to do so. And many Dinei Torah, certainly the smaller ones, are resolved with a Dayan Yachid. You go through one Dayan, Makabel Kenyan, instead of going through involving the expense and the formality of a Beis Din of Gimel. While it works, we all know Mishnah Avos of Al Tehi Don Yechidi. Mishnah tells us you should not be a Dayan Yachid. And the reason is very simple. There's only one Dayan Yachid, and that is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Mishpat and Din is very difficult. When parties come in, it's very difficult to know what really happened. It's very difficult to know what really the expectations, what the minhag is, and very often the halacha itself. Chayish Mishpat is a very difficult area in halacha. There are many stakeholders, there are many machlokesim, and it is very difficult to get the psakdin right. The Yerushalmi brings down, right in the times of the Amoraim, that the Yerushalmi says that there is no one around that knows how to paskin din correctly. Being a Dayan Yachid, telling parties, come to me, I'll take care of it, I'll hear you, I'm going to tell you with Dvar Hashem, is somewhat presumptuous. And I can tell you just from personal experience, the more you're involved in Chayish Mishpat, the more Dini Torah you sit on, the more you realize how difficult it is and why you can try your best, you can do what you can, actually using my gas, for a dying to get up there and with confidence say, I was the Oyer Ba'umfi Shaldava, this is Emet La'amita, nobody can do that today. When you have a bed in a three, you have much better chances. Like Kim Nitzah Ba'adas, tell you, there's a certain siyat and the shmaya of the bed. And aside from the siyat and the shmaya, when you have three people, you have three minds, you have three different perspectives looking at the case, discussing it, arguing about it, debating it, and you have a much better chance of arriving at the MS. When you go to one yachid, no matter how talented or intelligent he may be, it's one person, one perspective. And therefore, if a person wants MS Lamitoi, he should go to a bedroom. If it's more important to him to get this over quickly, this be done more in a more cost-effective manner, and that's what they want to do, you can go to a yachid. There's nothing wrong with halacha if the parties accept it. But if a person wants true MS Lamitoi, he's better off going to a Beis Din of Gemim. Now the Shach speaks out that even though the Faris agree to go to a Yachid that works, he says because Chayish Mishpat is hard, the Dayan should warn the parties, you want to come to me? Fine. But I'm telling you right now, I don't know how long. I'll hear you out, I'll do my best, I'll give you my opinion, but any idea of Lodin Din Torah, I don't really know how to pass him. If you want to come, you want my opinion, I'll give it to you. But there should be a full and explicit disclosure of the fact that you don't really know halacha, and you're simply going to try your best. Now the Aruch HaShulchan says that the practice is not to make that disclosure. People understand when they go to a yachid where they stand. I always had an argument with my chavrusa for many years. I always took the position that today we should disclose it. Because you have people go around giving shiur, so people are going to think that they're Talmidei Chachamim, and they really know halacha, and they're coming in expecting Emes La'amita. So to be honest, the person should follow the shach, and should say, any idea I didn't tell you, I'll do my best, but I don't really know the psak halacha. Chavrusa always told me, Ari, you're taking yourself too seriously. Everyone knows where I'm at them. They know exactly what they're getting. And there's no reason to disclose it. But Apple, it's certainly a good policy. Let the parties know. You want Emes Lamita to go to a Bezdin. You want a quick or more efficient and pleasant resolution. Then a Yachid could help. There are two situations where Yachid should be avoided. The first is if there are factual disputes. If someone is lying. And if you know, if the stories don't stem, and you have to cross-examine the parties and interrogate them, it's a lot more effective to do that in the Beis Din of Three. There's a certain presence, there's a certain intimidation, if you will, and seriousness of a Beis Din, which a Yachid rarely has. And therefore, if you need to beat the truth out of someone, you're better off going to a formal Beis Din and doing it there, as opposed to just sitting or going to a Dayan Yachid, sitting in a study, and trying to work things out. The second point is that if you go to a yachid and you win, if the other party doesn't follow through, they don't listen, there's really no enforcement mechanism for a yachid. A Beis Din has the right to put someone in chayiv. A Beis Din has the right to give a heter hakos. Once they issue a psak, go to court and let the judge enforce the matter. A yachid does not put out a siruk. A yachid also does not have the right to issue a heter hakos, and therefore is much more difficult to enforce. Now, there is an arbitration agreement, and if you just go to court and get it confirmed, that probably would be okay. But in many cases, it's much more difficult. If you have reason to believe the party will not listen, you're better off going to a formal Beis Din from day one, and that way you'll have better protections if he just doesn't want to comply. So, once we've decided we're going to a Beis Din, the question becomes, Who chooses the best? Now, there's this great game that's played in the Bezdin system. And that is like this. Al pi halacha, we have two issues. We don't have a hierarchy of what they did. In Havdil, in civil court, there's a lower court, there's an appeals court, there's a Supreme Court, there's a hierarchy. You go to this court first, you're not happy with the result, you can file an appeal, and you can bring it up, escalate it, and potentially until the Supreme Court. In halacha, we really don't have that. There is a Sanhedrin HaGadol in Yerushalayim. There were the local Batei Din, and there was what was called the Beis Havad, which was, I would say, the regional Beis Din that was more chashuv, that knew things better. But there wasn't a formal hierarchy. And the question is, what happens if one party wanted to go to a local Beis Din, the other party wanted to go to the Beis Havad, or wanted to go to Yerushalayim? So there are two Gemaras that seem to be a stira. There are many different shitas in the Rishonim how to interpret it. But at the end of the day, what comes out is, today, the mitzvah has the upper hand. The defendant can generally choose a Beis Din, or at least he can't be forced to go to the plaintiff's, the Teveah's Beis Din. You have to make the mitzvah happy. He has to accept the Beis Din. One of the reasons for this, as Dom explains, is that, say you have two people who are fighting. One is a member, is a modern Orthodox Jew, and the other is a member of the Sassner Kehidim. They get into a machlokes. Which Beis Din are they going to go to address the matter? Now, the Sassner fellow is going to say, I want to go to Hesachdus. They're the most chashuva dayanim. They're the ones that know the halacha, and I want to go there. The more modern fellow will say, I want to go to the RCA or whatever Beis Din is affiliated with his particular strand. And the question is, how do you deal with this kind of stalemate? So, strictly in halacha, depending on the case, you generally have the right to say, to go to the better Beis Din. The better Beis Din, you go, you have the right, we want the best Beis Din possible, so whoever pushes for that, again, depends today, and it's in town, out of town, Beis Havad, without going to the details, generally you go to the best Beis Din. If that was the halacha today, how would we figure out what is the best Beis Din? Who would make that determination? Where are the rankings? We don't have any rankings, we don't have any system that decides this Beis Din is ranked A, B, C, there's no system in place. Because there's no such thing, the halacha is, you can never force a person out of town. You go to whatever Batei Din are local, they're the ones that deal with it. And if there's a question over whether you go to this Beis Din or that Beis Din, instead of trying to figure out which one is truly more chashuv, we follow the mitzvah. And the reason is, the mitzvah, at the end of the day, the defendant is the one that if he loses, he's the one that's going to have to cut a check. It is more likely for him to cut that check if the venue was a venue that he was comfortable with, that he had a hand in choosing, than if he was forced to appear in front of a Beis Din that he didn't want to. And therefore, in general, the mitzvah has the upper hand. He can choose where to go. Now, because of this, I mentioned before, this great game that's played. You have a dispute with someone. So you want to send them a hazmana. Now, very often, if you send a hazmana from Beis Din A, the fellow who receives the hazmana, his gut reaction is, he wants me to go to Beis Din A. He must think that Beis Din, for some reason, is good for him. So I'm going to go to any Beis Din in the world, except for Beis Din A, and the response is perfectly legitimate for you to respond to a Beis Din. I agree, we have an issue, we got to resolve it in a detail, but not by you. I want to go list another Beis Din. And that is people's knee-jerk reflexive reaction. If you send out the money from A, I want to go to B. I don't want to. Now, this has been going on for so long that people have gotten a little bit more clever. And if you have a hazmona and you want to go to Beis Din A, the last thing you do is ask them to send the hazmona. You go to Beis Din B and send the hazmona. The fellow gets the hazmona and his reaction is, okay, I'll go anywhere, I'll go to A, not B, that's not for me. Now, of course, both parties are in a shir today. They have a little game theory, figuring out what to do next. But in general, again, this is the knee-jerk reaction. There's really no reason for it. The fact that hazmona was sent from one bezdin is usually meaningless. And again, today it's more likely it was sent because they don't want to go there. So you should really just choose the bezdin that you have confidence in instead of trying to psychoanalyze and double-guess the other baal din or the other baal din's tayin. But ultimately, again, you can't be forced to go to one particular bezdin. When you get a hazmona, you have to respond, but it's perfectly legitimate to say, I want to respond, but don't want to go to your bezdin. Now, what happens if the teveya wants one bezdin, nitzvah wants another bezdin, and they're deadlocked? They can't agree on any specific bezdin. So here, there's a concept of a zavua. Zavua is an abbreviation for zebar lo yafad, zebar lo yafad, which means no bezdin around is good enough. One party wants one, the other party the other. What you do is you tell each party, listen, we don't have a formal bezdin that you're happy with. Each person pick one dayan that will be his bayar. That he chose. Each party is obviously going to choose a dayan that they have a lot of confidence in, that knows what his eruv, knows halacha, will look after his position. The two bayarim that were chosen by their respective sides, together, and generally with the input of Baldin, choose a neutral shalish, a neutral dayan. And that is the bezdin. So it's not a formal bezdin that sits together regularly. Each party has one bayar, one dayan, so to speak, in their corner that they chose, that they appointed, and the two of them together appoint the neutral. This method, al-piyat, in Bidina de Gemara, is preferred. And the reason is that whenever you go to a bezdin, the party's okay. Bezdin, it's 3-3 dayanim, they have a nice reputation. Okay, so I went to this bezdin. When there's a zavla, everyone knows, first of all, I have my guy on the team. And that's someone who I know, like, full confidence in. He knows what he's doing. He's eruv, he knows halacha, he knows business. I can count on him. They also know the shalish, the middle person, was chosen with his hastama, with his okay. He had input. You can't impose a shalish against, over either party's will. And therefore, you know, one of the three is certainly in your corner, the other one is neutral, but someone you have confidence in, and therefore, Gemara says, you're more likely to accept that psakdin because you know the panel was fair and overall unbiased.
I'm not clear on whether the defendant fits the pit, or whether you do this thing where you each pick one.
Each pick one. Zeb Bar Layafa brings the defendant picks one, the plaintiff picks one, and the two together pick a third.
Why did you say earlier that when there's two in town, the defendant gets to choose which one?
No, sorry. The defendant has the upper hand, the Hosan Akhar and Nitzra, when it's a question of going to one or the other, or going to the Gemara's case is especially where you can go to Bezin Agadol or Beis Avah, or a greater bezin. And there the Mitzvah has the upper hand. When it's not a question of going out of town, it's in town a question of which one. Or if there's a question of which one is greater, there's a deadlock, they have the right to choose a Zavla, which avoids the whole issue. Because when you're doing a Zavla, everyone has equal rights in the process. This is all wonderful in theory. In practice, Zavlas today look rather different than the Gemara. Zavlas very often today, the Boyerim that are chosen, they really have a very difficult position. They're chosen by their side, but they're Dayan. They have to pass them to do what's right. Medina de Gemara, a Boyer has the same halacha as a Dayan. He has to be paid by both parties equally or not paid. He can't be paid by one party. He can't have ex parte communication. He can't talk to one party, even his side, his client, if you will. He can't talk to him privately. Because this is a dentator. He has to do what's right. So midin to Gemara, a zavua, the regular bezin, just how you pick the panel of three was through a zavua process. In practice today, for whatever reasons, the system evolved, and a boyer is very often hired by his side. He is paid directly by his side only, and he speaks to his party, zeshlo d'mezeh. They strategize before the case, they discuss it afterwards before the psak. To a certain degree, he's a representative or an advocate that's sitting on the panel. Again, not quite the same. Now, alpi halacha, there's no such thing. And you can't justify this alpi halacha. This is not a bezdin. Nevertheless, that is the minhag, that is the de facto practice. And a person goes through a zavla, and he agrees to it, he accepts it, So like everything else in Bar Mitzvah, if you accept it, you agree to it, then you can't change your mind afterwards. However, the outcome, the process is very different than what it's supposed to be, what it's supposed to look like at the halacha. And therefore, a person going into it has to realize when there's a discussion at which bezin to go towards or to go to Zablarut today looks very different than the Din of the Gemara, and a person should really think long and hard before he goes down that route. Zablos are typically significantly more expensive than a regular bezin. Each player is paid by his side. They charge a significant premium to sit as a player. On top of that, there's no structure. There's no staff of the dayanim, there's no formal system, and therefore you have three different dayanim who have three different day jobs, three different bakei din, maybe from different countries, to coordinate everyone's schedule. It can be a nightmare. They tend to schlep out, and schlep, and schlep, and schlep. So it takes longer, it's more expensive. It's something to think long and hard. It's almost always better to agree on a bed than even if it's kavua, even if it's not your first choice, than to go down the virus route. Now, to avoid all these issues, if a community is cohesive enough to appoint a bezin kavua, and this is what happened historically, this is what happened, a community appointed a bezin. And once they do that, if they have a bezin kavua, then none of these issues come up. Because this is the bezin for the kehila, it is an issue, it goes there. People do not have the right to say, I want to go to another kehila, I want to go to another town, I want to do a zavla. Me'ikar hadin, if there is a bezin kavua that a kehila set up and accepted, then they're the ones that have jurisdiction, and all of these issues go away. In general, Moshe writes that a bezin kavua does not exist in the United States. You'll have certain communities or certain cities that are cohesive, there's enough achdus, can pull it off, and I believe there are a few today. But typically, if you're in, certainly if you're in New York, where there's no one bezin kavua, you have multiple batei din. And the chances of getting everyone together to vote and install one particular panel as a bezin kavua on the entire city is, the chances of that happening are probably about zero. So we're stuck with this back and forth of which bezin to go to or to end up in the double up. Okay, so now we've gotten through the process of where to go, Yachid, Bezdin, Zabla. What does an actual Din Torah look like? So the first thing that happens when you walk through the doors is you're given two pieces of paper to sign. A Shtar Beruin and an arbitration agreement. The arbitration agreement is a legal document. And the purpose is that when you go to a Bezdin, the Bezdin's Pesach Din is not really enforceable. However, if you sign an arbitration agreement and you accept the bezin as an arbitration panel, then the psak din is enforceable in civil court as well. Every bezin will insist, we're not going to hear the case unless you're ready to sign an arbitration agreement. Because since we know the only way to enforce this is by having an arbitration agreement, by being able to go to court. If a person says, I'll go to bezin, I'm just not signing the agreement, what he's basically telling you is, I'll go, I'll humor you. If I win, I win. And if I lose, jumping away. I'm not gonna listen to it. So if he refuses to sign an arbitration agreement, that's the equivalent of not coming to Bezdin. Bezdin will not take the case. He'll insist that it's signed so that whatever the psak, the issue is enforceable. Now, if it is signed and it's done correctly, whatever, and there is a psak din, the party that wins can go to court and he does not have to litigate the whole case. There's an arbitration agreement. All he has to do is show the judge the arbitration agreement, the award, and get it confirmed. And in general, it's a rubber stamp process. A judge does not have the right to say, you know what, I don't agree with this psak. I hold like the Rashba, not the Ramban. There's an arbitration agreement. This is the award. If the bezin does something really off the charts or off the rails, then there is a judicial review, but it's very limited, and it's rather difficult to prevail on that. But it's important to make sure it's done correctly and make sure that it's done. That's for legal purposes. The second document is a shtar beruin, and that accomplishes two things. The first thing is you're accepting the bezin. As I mentioned before, what they did today do not have jurisdiction. They can't force someone come to submit to us. Even when the parties come, when they're makabel kinyan, when they sign the shtar beruin, that's when they're accepting this panel of the bezin. And now, if you have lawful, whatever the bezin ish, psak is. It's binding on the parties. But more than that, is if you read through Rosh Chodesh Purim, you're waving many of your rights away. There are many rights that a Baal Din would have al pi halacha that in practice would cause, wreak havoc if the Baal Din didn't follow. And therefore, you're waving various rights when you saw in the Shtag Ruin. To go through some of them, or some of the issues, is one of the basic, most fundamental questions is when you go to a Din Torah, are you going for Din, or are you going for Pshar? Or Peshach Harav Din? Now, Din is simple. You want to know what the halacha is. Chayyeh, Pater, open up Shulchan Aruch, what's the halacha? Pshara, which means a compromise or a settlement, is very, very widely misunderstood. People have this impression, Bezdin likes making pshara. Whatever I do, I'm going to come in, Bezdin will split the baby. Now, obviously, people, that's not very appealing to people. Someone wakes up and decides that you owe them $3 million. You're not interested in pshara. Bezdin says, okay, let's call it 1.5 and send everyone home. But in truth, pshara is not what pshara is. What pshara means, and the Gemara actually says, is that a Bezdin has a mitzvah. When you come in, Bezdin should encourage pshara. Pshara does not mean splitting the baby. Pshara means that when Bezdin paskins, or Bezdin will try to work something out, they're allowed to take factors into account that are not strict in. The Gemara says they can take shalom into account. They can take shalom. You have two partners, they're partners for many years, everything's working out, they got into a dispute. Now it's possible al pi din one party is right. But it's also very likely that if the other party does have a point. And if you give him a few dollars, you will avoid a tremendous machlokes. Is it din? No. And if the party say, I don't want Shara, I want din, or Peshach Harav din, they're entitled to that. But if you want to know what's better, what the Gemara considers a greater mitzvah, it's a greater mitzvah to do Peshach because you're keeping the peace, you're keeping the Shalom. And a chaver of mine once went to a din Torah, was with a moysid. This is a very, very, he's a character. Very energetic and lively fellow. So he came into the Din Torah, and he came and he prepared. He had a whole presentation. He was very, again, a great actor and very, very emotional. And he came in basically foaming at the mouth, ranting and raving about what terrible, terrible avos the other organization did. Okay, went back and forth for two sessions. Gets that back to Pesach again, and he lost on every single count. Completely. The Bezdin wrote at the end, that in this type of matter, I don't want to go into too much detail, we generally would make a pshara. Because the person suffered, it was a difficult situation, it was a very, very, very unpleasant situation to be in. In this case, we would normally make a pshara. But when we saw the person came in, ranting and raving, so upset, we saw, giving the guy a few dollars, not going to help. He's going to be just as angry, whether we give him a little or don't, so we're not going to do it. There's no point. We're not going to throw away the other person's money, so like you did. And therefore, they need him absolutely zero. But in a case where, by making some sort of adjustment, there's a basis for it, of course, Shalom, that's a reason to avoid the din, to adjust the din. Now, you can't be imposed. If a person says, I don't want it, you can't force him, because he's entitled to his rights out to the din. But it's something which is recommended. Now, another reason to accept Shara is, say you have two partners, and this is a dispute. Or you have two neighbors. If you go straight din, very often the law will be chayav or patur. Either his, you're right, or the other person's right. But you'll end up, you get what you're entitled to. You may end up in a very unworkable situation. You're still partners. How do you show up to work tomorrow when the winner and the loser? Bezdin has very little authority to start being creative and to start making new rules or putting in safety nets or safeguards to make things work out better. When you sign Shara, you're giving the Bezdin a lot more leeway. And you sign Shara, Bezdin can say, okay, I'll keep in, maybe you're right on this, but we see this partnership isn't working, and Bezdin can do things that'll simply be more practical and better for everyone going forward. It's not Din. But in practical terms, very often it's better for the parties to have a pshara worked out, even if it's not strict din. Now again, this can't be imposed. If you don't want the Bezdin to be mafasha, you want to only give them the right to say chayav potter, you have the right to make that limitation. But in practice, it's very often not a good idea. Another area of pshara is very often things are simply unclear. The facts are unclear. Sometimes the parties don't even remember what happened. Sometimes they both remember, and they remember opposite things. And other times, this is a question of halacha. The halacha is unclear. So sometimes we say, I'm ready to go over Raya, we can say Kimmel. But there is a concept that Bezdin is not confident about what happened. Bezdin can very often make a pshara because of the various sakes, because halacha is not clear, there are different hogim, different practices. If you give the Bezdin the right to make a pshara, they will, then that gives them more leeway. Now, again, this, because it's not straight din, you can't be forced to accept shara. You can go ahead, I want din, or peshakara with it. But very often, it's just not a good idea. From my personal experience, so in the Bezdin, people come in, and the first thing we ask them is, do you want pesher, do you want peshakara with din, do you want din, what do you want? Now, if one person says, I want pesher, the other one says, no, I want kara with din. So what happens? We would do din, because you can't force someone to give up his rights. Only when both parties agree to the pshara. 9 out of 10 times, when we have that dispute, one is wanting to do pshara, the other one wants karav din, the one that wants to pshara wins. Now, I don't think it's because of some esoteric, you know, neither connected. I think it's a very simple question. A person who wants din is a certain mind frame. Black, white. Everything is absolute. I want din, this is what I want. A person who comes in and says, I want pshara, is type of personality is usually more flexible, more able to see the other person's point of view. And therefore, what we found is that people who come in for ready to each other, if they were wrong, they probably would have settled before they came to Bezdin. They have a much better handle of where they stand. The ones that insist on din, very often, again, it's because of a certain rigidness, which at the end of the day will come back to haunt them. So in practical terms, pshara is generally advised, if only if you have a lot of confidence in the Bezdin's judgment. Because they're veering off halacha, they're using their seichel, they're using their hasharas hadas, you have to be very comfortable that they have good judgment, they'll understand the case, they'll understand business. But if you do, in general, the outcome is better for the people that way. Now, what is clear is that pshara, just because you say you agree to pshara, does not mean Bezdin will make a pshara. I've just gone through some of the criteria. Shalom, sveikas, things don't work out. Those are reasons to make pshara. If there's a clear right and wrong, one person is just dead wrong, and there's no concept of shalom, that's not going to make a difference there. Even if you sign for pshara, Bezdin will pass in right or wrong. Because this is the din, there's no reason to veer off it. It gives them the sign of perpetual means they have the authority to make a pshara if appropriate. It doesn't mean that they will. And more often than not, at least again, my personal experience, even when the parties come for pshara, very often they'll be upset one way or another. Because very often it will be clear, there'll be no reason to go and veer off the din. But in the case where there is a reason, there are stakers, the shalom, whatever the chesbonos are, then giving the ability to make shalom and to make pshara is something which a Bezdin will use and will take into account in order to just make sure that everything works out. Okay, I think we're ready over time. So, let's say this. Shara gives the Bezdin the right to go up to 50-50. Peshakar of the Din typically gives them the right to go up to a third. Again, where there's shluah involved and Bezdin's convinced they're lying, they can in theory go above that. But yes, typically pshara, the amount that they can go off the din is somewhat limited to 50%, and peshakar of the din is limited to a third off what the straight din should be.
So you say you can't impose a pshara. So that means that if a person walks out and says, you know, I want the Inan faith instead, I won't go along with that, I can't just do Safsayru or...
Okay, so what typically happens is like this. Most Batei Din offer Pesha or Pesha Karibu Din. Straight Din they do not offer. In theory, your argument is a good argument. I can comment, I don't want Pesha Karibu Din, I want straight Din. The Tzitz Eliezer has a very nice argument. Again, whether everyone will agree with it or not, I don't know. And he says, because today the minute of all Batei Din is to do Pesha Karibu Din, just like in Kivega brings down in Marshat, if the minhag was to follow certain minhag aseretim, to follow certain industry-wide laws, that becomes binding on the parties. So Pesher Karav Ladin became essentially the minhag aseretim that's binding and it can be forced. But if the Bezdin wants to do straight shara, they certainly cannot write a seer because if the person refuses to accept that.
Sometimes you see has money from it.
out-of-town Beis Din, what right do they have to issue in Hasmana?
A Beis Din will typically not send a Hasmana from out of town. There are certain limited exceptions. For example, if there's a Gavra Alma. Let's say the case involves either the local gangster who runs the mafia here, or in the other extreme, just a very wealthy, influential person. So here there's a halacha that the Baal Din can say, in this town, I don't stand a chance. This person is too strong, too influential. No one's going to want to go up against him. I want to move the case out of town. That concept does exist. It also exists if the two people may be here, but the business is somewhere else. So there, the Amar Mekamis that you go after the Makam HaEsek, not necessarily where the people live. Those cases always get messy and get sticky, but that's usually the explanation behind the Hasmana.
But if someone calls the Mossad to a base and the president shows up, he says he doesn't have the right to sign an arbitration agreement.
So he's not there. It will be the same thing as if nobody showed up. You tell the Mossad, send someone down who is authorized. Send the board. Someone's authorized to sign an arbitration agreement. There's someone who signs the documents. When they take out a mortgage, someone signs the paper. Whoever that is should come down and sign. And then in an arbitration that we typically will have, that if someone signs on behalf of an organization, if the organization comes later and says, he wasn't authorized, the person who signed writes in the agreement, he's responsible for whatever the stock is. So before you sign on behalf of an organization, make sure that you're authorized to go ahead and do it. Otherwise, personally, the person, they'll be significant issues.
So suppose you have an issue between two people and one person is not more learned than the other. Why can't the person that's less learned go to their rabbi and say, tell me how these, what the block is here? Because you said that the rabbi's not supposed to pass.
Okay, so let me just take a step back. When people come to Beis Din, the job of the people is not to lecture the Dayanim on what the halacha is. If you're going to a Beis Din where you feel that the Dayanim need to be told what the halacha is, you probably should keep on looking. So the level of learnedness, I've never seen that impact the case. A person came in, such a Talmud Chacham, that he was able to win because he understood Chayesh Mishpat. I've never seen that happen.
No, I'm just saying he knows what to expect, because you were saying one of the downsides of somebody asking him is it might actually change. You might by mistake change your story and say, maybe it wasn't this way, it was that way, because you know that if it was this way, you're going to lose. But the person that has the entrepreneur knowledge could do that anyway without realizing it.
That's true, but the difference is, if someone who has that extra knowledge hopefully is wise enough to realize he has a bias as well. And what a Talmud Chacham thinks will be, he'll win a case, that's just his opinion, and what happens, how a Beis Din will hear it, all bets are off. Mashenkin, when an outside person is telling him this is halacha, that already is reason for a person to go ahead. And so that's one. And the second point is, you're right, the Talmud Chacham may have this problem. Hopefully he's honest enough and won't try. But to go ahead and educate everyone so everyone has the problem is not really, the aggregate doesn't help. Okay, I don't want to keep everybody else. If anyone else needs to go, I'll be happy to answer questions. But I guess we'll formally end in case anybody wants to go.